I'm speaking with Rafif Ziada. Rafif is an organizer with the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid based in Toronto. Rafif is also a third-generation Palestinian refugee. Rafif, welcome to No One's Legal Radio.
Thank you, Jaggy.
Rafif, we're in the middle of the fifth Israeli Apartheid Week. It started in Toronto 5 years ago. You were active and involved in making Israeli Apartheid Week happen with many, many other people. I'm wondering if we could start with your reflections on how Israeli Apartheid Week has grown and how the response by supporters of Israel has also grown in opposing Israeli Apartheid Week.
It's actually incredible. I think when we first started Israeli Apartheid Week, not in a million years would we have dreamed that it would grow to be in 40 cities around the world. And today, 5 years ahead, it's in 40 cities around the world, including Palestine and South Africa, which is really symbolic for us that it's grown to this level. When it first started by the Arab Students Collective at U of T, we were mostly the speakers that were there each evening. The events were really small. We were happy when we got about 20 to 30 people. This year, again, 5 years later, the rooms are all completely full to capacity. We're even having to turn people away. Because of this success, however, because the idea of Israel as an apartheid state is becoming normalized in the mainstream, the attack against Apartheid Week this year has been very vocal, but despite all the attacks, it's still going, which is really a testament to the activists that have put in a full year of their lives to make sure these events take place.
Well, talk a little bit about that that attack, especially on university campuses, particularly in southern Ontario. You're a student at York University, so maybe we can start there, which has sort of become a focal point for the opposition of Zionist groups to Israeli Apartheid Week. They've been playing up certain incidents there. So could you provide your firsthand perspective of both Israeli Apartheid Week as it's playing out at York, but also the repression and the attacks by administrations and by supporters of Israel?
Well, York University has historically not been extremely nice to Palestinian solidarity organizing. The atmosphere there has always been one of intimidation for Palestinian organizers. There are a lot of Zionists that attend the school, and they try to make sure that it's a very intimidating environment for all of us. Many members of SAIA, especially women, many of us women of color, have been harassed and attacked by Zionist organizations on campus, and when we go and file these complaints, usually they're not followed up on, or nothing happens. So that is a consistent factor that we have to work with and deal under the entire time we're at York. The difference this time is that there is a very orchestrated and organized campaign to actually shut down Israeli Apartheid Week. SAIA, the group that organizes Apartheid Week at York, Students Against Israeli Apartheid, was recently suspended. The reason given for the suspension is a demonstration we held in solidarity with the students of Gaza. And it's been a consistent fight over space within York University. Very Hall is kind of the central space within campus, the center of the campus where we could hold any activities. And there's always a denial for space, there's always a denial of bookings. But we decided to hold this demonstration because the university president refused to condemn the bombing of the universities in Gaza. Meanwhile, he went completely ballistic when people were talking about the academic boycott of Israel, yet he refuses to say anything about the bombing of universities in Gaza. So we felt as students we needed to really speak up and bring this to the forefront, and we did, and the demonstration was very successful. We actually left Very Hall pretty quickly because our aim was to deliver a letter to the York Foundation asking them to cut their ties with Israeli apartheid. As usual, there was a Zionist presence. As usual, we just don't engage with them. We ignore it. We kept peaceful. We had our marshals. But still, with all of that organizing, the administration decided to suspend the group for a month and to also put a fine on it of $1,000, which is the maximum fine you can put. Also, the person who's a signatory, the main student signatory on the group, got a fine to her personal account. So it's a way to also attack organizers who put their names down as signatories for certain groups. That's the nutshell of what happened on the SAIA front. And with that, they tried to link that incident to an incident that happened the day before, which SAIA members hadn't organized and weren't involved in, that had to do more with the York strike. Where there were students who were trying to oppose the student union for supporting the strike. They called themselves the Drop the YFS Coalition, and they were going around getting signatures to make sure that the YFS executive loses. Now, the reason they were saying was because of the strike and the support for the strike. The other thing they were attacking was that the YFS, the York Federation of Students, also passed a resolution in support of Gaza, condemning the bombings of Gaza. So it wasn't a coincidence that, you know, those were their two main issues. They tried to collect signatures. They tried to hold a press conference. And when students of color tried to enter the press conference, they said, "This is not for you people." So people started chanting. People were saying, you know, "This is our right, it's our university, if you're going to hold a press conference." And the students ended up, who were holding the press conference, running away and going to hide in the Hillel office.
Rafif, this comes on the heels of trying to ban the use of the phrase Israeli apartheid at McMaster, the poster that was banned at Carleton and the University of Ottawa. So I'm wondering if you can just talk more generally about the climate beyond York and the general climate, the general trends that we're seeing against Palestine solidarity organizers, especially in the context of Israeli Apartheid Week.
I mean, York has certainly has its own features, but we are seeing that this is a coordinated campaign all across, starting with the banning of the poster. It was banned at Carleton and University of Ottawa. The poster depicts a Palestinian child with the word Gaza under the child being killed or by a tank. This is a factual thing. It's happened 430 times in Gaza, yet this poster is being banned on campuses. Also, there was an article recently written about UFT where there was a freedom of information collection that happened, and it was made very clear that the university administration was actually coming up with excuses to ban room bookings for SIA even before SIA had even put in the rooms that they wanted booked. The university knew that SIA was going to book rooms, and at the top levels of the administration, they were trying to make sure that the conference SIA was holding didn't happen. So this is happening across the board, besides outside coordinated pressure. So we're seeing B'nai B'rith, for example, take an entire ad saying you should shut down Israeli Apartheid Week. Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center have a whole thing on their website about how Apartheid Week is a hate fest. And now they're also getting the government involved, and ministers are coming out and saying things against it. This also, in addition to the attack on QP for passing the motion in support of the academic boycott, the Liberal Party putting out statements. So it's a very well-coordinated campaign between administrations and Zionist organizations and Canadian parties, because they're starting to see that the term apartheid and Israel is becoming mainstream. It's really scary, especially in light of Gaza. People no longer have any illusions about what Israel is or the nature of Israeli apartheid. And Israeli Apartheid Week acts as a forum to educate people on this issue, and they want to make sure the debate is shut down.
Rafif, there's that old expression, just as much as what they do, what's important is what we do. You've alluded to that just at the end of your last response about how we should be responding. I'm wondering if you could elaborate a bit, share your insights about the tactics and strategies that we should be using, both in the face of this clampdown on Palestine solidarity organizing, but also to build a movement to expose Israeli oppression against Palestinians and Israeli apartheid.
I think the most important thing to do right now is to keep doing what we're doing and keep ourselves organized and going strong. Israeli Apartheid Week, as I was saying earlier, has grown to 40 cities. We want to make sure that next year it grows to even more cities, and we keep up the level of professionalism that we've been having in all our events. Another thing that's really important is not to be provoked by the attempts to shut us down. We see here in Toronto, the Jewish Defense League has been coming out to most of our events, being extremely aggressive, trying to harass people, making it so uncomfortable for people. So on us, and it's very difficult when you're Palestinian and you've lived under occupation to have to be calm in front of their aggression all the time. But unfortunately, it's the environment we live in, and we need to really stay calm and make sure they don't provoke us, because they just want an incident in order to be able to shut down Israeli Apartheid Week, and we don't want to give them what they're looking for. So we're following a policy of not engaging with them in any way, shape, or form. at this point. I think going on these two tracks of continuing to organize, focusing on our work, and ignoring them because they're not winning the fight, I think is the best thing to do.
Rafif, we're in the middle of Israeli Apartheid Week, both in Toronto, where you're speaking from, and here in Montreal. Here in Montreal, we started with a panel called Apartheid in Canada. The next night, we had Zohar Bashara, a Lebanese, former Lebanese political prisoner and resistance fighter. And just this past evening, Ronnie Casseroles from South Africa, involved in the struggle against apartheid in South Africa, and an outspoken Palestine solidarity activist, spoke. And you're coming to town tomorrow to speak on a panel about feminist resistance to Israeli apartheid. I'm wondering if you could share some of your thoughts on that particular topic that you'll be addressing tomorrow, about feminist perspective or the feminist viewpoint in opposing Israeli apartheid.
I think the voice that gets silenced in Palestine is mostly the voice of women. The Palestinian narrative is always said from the perspective of Israelis. The Palestinian narrative is always silenced completely, especially here in Canada, when the Canadian government is extremely complicit in apartheid. So having a feminist lens to look at the situation in Palestine is really critical, because what's happening really, really affects women. But more importantly, the way Israel looks at Palestinians, the whole issue of demographic threat, how they think of all of us as demographic threats, pertains to Palestinian women. It's actually our bodies that they consider to be threats. That's what they call their demographic threat. So looking at it from the perspective of women and how the Israeli state and Israeli apartheid really functions to hurt Palestinian women is a really important lens to look through. And that's some of the stuff I'll be talking about in my talk tomorrow.
Rafif, the opposition to Israeli Apartheid Week revolves around many things, in particular the use of that term apartheid to apply to the state of Israel. And I'm wondering if you could break down for our listeners why that term is appropriate and why saying Israeli apartheid and organizing Israeli apartheid weeks are an effective way of organizing.
Thanks for the question, Dagi. It's always good to explain to people why we're using the term, because we're being attacked for using the term. We use it specifically because it describes exactly what Israel is today. There is a United Nations Convention on the Crime of Apartheid. If people have a chance to look at it, they really need to, because they will see how every item on that convention actually applies to Israel. The term apartheid itself means separation. If you'll just look at a map of Palestine today, you will see how it is being divided and people are being separated according to what their religion is. Israel has created a system of Bantustans, where Palestinians who live in the West Bank and Gaza Strip are cut off from each other. Their entire life is controlled by Israel. Palestinian refugees are not allowed the right to return because of their religion, because they don't happen to be Jewish. Palestinian citizens of Israel are treated as second and third class citizens, again, because they happen to be the wrong religion. So this is a system of apartheid that's imposed on the entire Palestinian nation, whether you're a Palestinian citizen of Israel or a refugee or living in the West Bank. Your life is controlled by the Israeli apartheid system. And there are many, many apartheid laws we can refer to. The pass laws, for example. Palestinians have different IDs than Israelis. Different educational systems. Settlers that live in the West Bank completely get resources and a different educational system. And just so Israel completely, doesn't leave anything up to our imagination, to fulfill their apartheid, they actually build a concrete wall. So there's no question anymore that Israel is an apartheid state to anybody. And what we saw in Gaza is just what Israel wants to implement in the West Bank. Gaza is just the earliest ghetto, the first Bantustan that's been completed, and that's the model they want for the West Bank as well.
Rafif, thank you for taking the time to speak with us on No One's Legal Radio.
Thank you so much, Jackie.